So again, number one, I think there's an awareness of people understanding how an MC can make or break an event. Number two, I think there's a lot more allies of diverse voices that didn't used to be. And I think number three, I think it's about really the events industry shifting from events and meetings to experiences.
Welcome to No More Bad Events, a fun and insightful podcast for professional event organizers and for anyone at any level interested in producing nothing but the best events. Each week, we'll talk with legendary event professionals to get an inside look into what they think makes a great event. And in the process, we'll draw out insider secrets, non-traditional approaches, and compelling stories from the most captivating personalities in the business. No More Bad Events is produced and presented by eSpeakers, the most trusted online platform for the best keynote speakers in the world. And I'm your host, Scott Bloom, comedian, event MC, and now your podcast host. Let's get started. Hey, folks, thanks for dropping by. We always appreciate when you do. I'm talking with Quinn Conyers today, and her energy is absolutely contagious. Quinn has been called the Beyoncé of emceeing and the espresso shot your event didn't know it needed. Those descriptions make perfect sense once you hear her talk about what she does. Quinn has over two decades of experience transforming events from good to what she calls grand. She's worked with Nike, Walmart, the UN, and written two books about the speaking industry. What really struck me about Quinn is how she thinks about the MC role. For her, it's not just about making introductions. It's about creating energy and connection. Plus those moments people remember long after they've thrown away their name badges. Quinn brings authenticity and emotional intelligence to everything she does, along with genuine enthusiasm that's hard to miss. She understands that being a world-class MC means creating experiences and collaborating with planners for memorable results. She's helping shift the industry from just having meetings to creating experiences that actually matter. We talk about what separates great MCs from everyone else and how to work with event planners effectively. Quinn shares amazing stories from her years in the business, including one about almost having to deliver a baby at an event that you'll have to hear to believe. What I love about Quinn's approach is how she's challenging old conference culture while advocating for professional MCs. She's passionate about diversity on stage and proving that when you get the emceeing right, everything else elevates. It's clear she's not just doing a job. She's on a mission to change how we think about events. So here's my conversation with the incredibly infectious and remarkably energetic Quinn Conyers. It is so good to finally meet you. I've been hearing a lot about you. I think I remember once reading something about you were compared to, as far as your energy, it was like two cups of coffee or better than two cups of coffee. And after meeting you, I would bump it up to a pot, go full pot, and all in the best way, all in the best way. You know, people would think, oh, they're just hyper. We got too much. No, it's just that you're very driven and you have a great personality and that comes through.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll take an elevation any day. Two cups to a whole pot is great. And yeah, I think it's needed and necessary. I used to believe that energy as an MC was my superpower. And now I feel like energy as an MC is a requirement. Like, I just believe whether you're kicking off a meeting, a conference or event at 8 o'clock in the morning, or if it is an evening event at 5 o'clock, there still needs to be a level of energy that I think that is very underestimated until you experience it. So I'm just always super grateful and proud that I built a brand that my energy and my personality not only exudes in person, but it exudes online and through introductions and things like that, because people will say, yeah, I heard about you, then they meet me. It's like, oh, it matches, right? Mm-hmm. What I heard and what I'm experiencing matches. So that's just a part of being authentic and in alignment.
And I think the authentic part's the important part there too, because I've seen some MCs that they were all about energy. In fact, they thought that they can work their role as just being hyped up and trying to hype the room, but it becomes inauthentic and actually becomes a little grating if it's not integrated into their personality, into what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. And you have to have people ask me all the time, like, what is the real kind of essence and beauty of being a great MC? And like I said, the old Quinn would have said probably energy. The Quinn who has experience and expertise in this field would probably say emotional intelligence, because you have to know when to be that hype man, when to be super high energy, and when not to be, because there could be certain things that are happening in a room at an event that do not require such high intense energy, but it requires a calm, a collected, and a very charismatic demeanor as well. So the emotional intelligence that it really takes to be in this role for one or multiple days is truly underestimated.
And it's funny because that's a lot about what I talk about in my keynote. So I MC and I also keynote, but just making that emotional connection with an individual or with an audience. I mean, they can really feel it. And that's how, as our job, we're trying to connect what's going on stage to the audience. We're trying to build that relationship. And in that relationship, they get more engaged, they get more interested, and we tend to sort of shift a little bit of how the presenters decide to present. They are almost forced to become more real, or they see the benefits of becoming real.
Oh, absolutely. Anybody who I introduce, there's pep in their step. I mean, even if it wasn't before, it's just like you can't come in mediocre when you just had a mind-blowing introduction. Like it just doesn't work. So I think a lot of speakers are really forced, if they're not already, like stepping it up a notch, right? Not just being a great storyteller, but there is a way that they consciously or unconsciously tap into a different level of stage presence, right? Because it's like, wow, like she really did a great job of setting me up to serve and support this audience through my thought leadership and my ideas and my framework. Like, I want to do a good job, right? I even have a lot of speakers say, I want to take you with me. I want to take you with me everywhere I go to speak because I don't get set up that well. Usually it is very robotic and it's very routine on here's my bio and read it. And a lot of times the speakers and the MCs are meeting a couple of minutes before they step on stage. So there's no real connection. And I do a little bit by going a little bit deeper to making sure that I do know a little something about that person beyond the bio, and then making sure that they have, a world-class intro.
And do you craft the intro along with what they give you? Do you add things to it?
Yeah, so I do add things, and part of my strategic way of approaching this is if the organizer gives it to me, I love to do a speak and greet, and those are usually virtual. And it's like, hey, Scott, my name is Quinn. I'll be introducing you. Is it Scott Bloom? Is it Scott Blim? Like, I want to get the right pronunciation. Is this the right bio? You'd be surprised how many times assistants sent over old bios, right? People, on this, it says three children. They may have four children, or don't forget the dog, right? Like, a dog is a child in their eye, right? So it's that part, just to have a little bit of rapport and let them know kind of how I'm going to support them on stage. And then I usually try to ask for a few fun facts to make it human, right? So I'll do their introduction. I'll say, and by the way, Scott's favorite ice cream is vanilla. Anybody else like vanilla ice cream? And that's an instant connection. So I try to not only introduce the person with excellence, I try to find something in the bio that can connect back to the audience that creates instant credibility
That's
and
great.
relationship building.
Yeah, that is our job. It's really about relationship building if we're doing it right. We were talking before we got on that you do know a good friend of mine, Rob Foray. The two of you, I think, co-hosted. I don't know if it was just the two of you, right?
It was
Or was
three
it?
of us. Amy
Okay.
Clymer was included as well.
Okay. And you were the first Black female MC at NSA. How'd that feel?
I didn't even think about it until somebody was like, I like the variety, And I think I was very grateful for that opportunity because not only did it shed a light on MCs, it shed a light on three different types of MCs. So Dr. Amy Clymer is more a facilitator and moderator. I am very much MC, engaging audience, attendee feedback. And then you got Rob, who I believe his specialty is including hosting and gamification. So for me, it was not only an opportunity to be the first. I'm the first in a lot of things that I do, but I was grateful to be able to show other speakers and the National Speakers Associations the benefit of a professional MC, but also to the diversity within that as well. Like, what does it look like? Because we're still a very much a male-dominated field, and there's not a lot of women. There's not a lot of women of color. So I was just grateful to be the first, but I'm not settled. I'm not satisfied. I would love to see more Latina women on stage. stage, more Asian women on stage, more people of color, more LGBTQ plus, you know, speakers as well. So it's not just me being the first, it's me making sure that I can be a catalyst as well as an example of what diverse talent looks like on stage and why it's needed and necessary.
And you've been doing this, I think, around 20 years. And so you've probably seen the changes that have gone on, not only at the meetings, but also on the types of MCs, as you mentioned. What have you seen as one of the biggest changes over, let's just say post-pandemic, over the last 5 years or even over the last 10 years?
I think a couple of things come to mind. First and foremost, people are starting to realize that boring board member Bob is not the right person to MC events. They are realizing that even though he wants to do it, he's been voluntold, that there is a carrying of energy. There are shifts. There are transitions. There are sponsors who do not want their name mispronounced, who are giving $20,000, $25,000, $30,000. So I think that people are starting to realize, wait a minute, we are not having our board member, or who I call introverted Ian, which is the CEO of the company, we don't have that person doing video, photography, AV, or even speaking as a keynote speaker. So why are we not outsourcing the MC role either? So I think there's been more of an awareness that a professional event MC can really be the glue that holds the event together. So I think there's a lot of what I call MC education happening. A lot of people might not know that they need a professional MC until they experience a Scott or a Quinn. And like, we need that at our next meeting, right? Number two, I think there's a lot more allies now. I think before, what I was told was we didn't know where to find speakers or MCs of color. We didn't know. It wasn't in our wheelhouse. So I think there's been a lot of allies. So it's people like Scott, you, and other people saying, hey, I might not be available, or I'm looking at your roster. I know some other people who might be a great voice to add. And I always say, you don't hire me because I'm a woman or I'm Black. You hire me because I'm professional and I'm qualified, right? So my gender and my racial background is just a bonus, but I went to school for this. It's not something that I just went to Google University or I went to just YouTube college. Like, I have a bachelor's degree in communication. I have a master's degree in mass communication media studies. So from a higher education standpoint, I put in the work, but also too, I put in my chops with courses and coaching pretty much in the speaking industry because there was no one teaching MCing, right? But I've learned that way. So again, number one, I think there's an awareness of people understanding how an MC can make or break an event. Number two, I think there's a lot more allies of diverse voices that didn't used to be. And I think number three, I think it's about really the events industry shifting from events and meetings to experiences. And people are just tired of the same panel, keynote, workshop presenter, right? So what can we do to transform this basic event into an epic experience? And part of that is an MC, but also tapping into all the skill sets that an MC can provide. And that's been one of my selling advantages. It's not like I'm going to be on stage just introducing speakers and sponsors. If that's what you want, I'm not the right MC for you. However, if you want your attendees or the members of your organizations to rave, refer others to attend, and of course, renew their membership year after year, that's where I come in because I love attendee engagement. So I think it's those three things that has really shifted the industry.
Yeah, I think you said that so well. I know that you kind of look at yourself as an event experience partner. And just the way you articulated that, the MC is not just about introductions. It's about helping to create that experience. It's kind of surprising to me that it hasn't yet caught on and how important it is. That's that central role, not just the glue that keeps everything together, but it's that person who is the professional, who speaks all the time and is throughout your event. Even the executive presenters, some of them are really good, but they're not doing it week after week. They might have to do a quarterly meeting or once a year they get on. So now you have a professional. And I think you really nailed it when you said people are looking for an experience now. So why not have someone at the helm who can help you create that experience? So do you work with some of these event planners, event organizers to help them create the experience beyond taking some of your background, some of your experience to consult with them to say, hey, these are some great ideas that you might want to implement?
Yes, if they hire me earlier in the process. Sometimes, and you know this from being in this role, we're the last to be hired, right? So they pretty much have an agenda. They have the speakers, they have everything. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, we need somebody to host this thing, right? So we come in and we're miracle workers, right? And we're fire putter outers. I don't know if that's a real word, but we were. That's what we do. And I'm like, if the MC is the first face that your attendee see, why are they the last to be hired?
Exactly. Exactly.
Because usually when I come on board and I see the run of show, I see the scripting and I'm like, oh my gosh, we could have did this. Or you'd be surprised how many people would say, you know, hey, I'm looking at, you know, all the keynote speakers and they're like, yeah, you know, these are all of our speakers. I'm like, there's no diversity in this. And like, Quinn, what are you talking about? We have, you know, a Black person here, an Asian person here. We have this, this, and this. And I'm like, yes, but they're all over the age of 60. You told me that part of your goal was to attract more millennials and Gen Z, and everyone is an expert, but they're over the age of 60, 65. Like, you're not going to attract. And they're like, oh, I was like, yeah, diversity doesn't mean gender and race. I'm looking at diversity in, if you want to attract, okay, can we get a 27-year-old speaker? Can we get a 40-year-old speaker? Can we get, like, it's looking at the whole thing. And sometimes planners don't do that. They're like, yes, we have a man, we have a woman, check. We are diverse. And I'm like, no. I'm also looking at, is this inclusive? I'm like, is everybody able-bodied? I see there's no ramps to get on stage, right? And like, yeah, no, everybody's able-bodied until somebody gets there with a boot on their foot, right? Like, just those things. So I always say, and that's part of, again, I share this all the time, I want to challenge traditional conference culture by making sure that every conference, meeting, and event has a professional event MC. But I also want other MCs to have the opportunity to shine as well. So it's not just about me getting on stages. It's about uplifting, elevating, and amplifying the whole MC role and allowing the planner to see the MC as not just a person who hosts, but a engagement partner, because we see different things ahead of time. I can look at a run a show, which I have before. I was hosting an event in Atlanta and I'm looking at the run of show and I'm like, okay, 2 o'clock, I need about 10 boxes of tissues. They're like, why do you need tissues? They're going to cry right here. Because I can tell based on the keynote, based on the topic, based on the person's bio, that's a tearjerker. And you don't want them on snotting, looking in tissues for in their bag. Like, I can see that. So I always like to say, please hire your MC first, because they can give you suggestions on speakers. They can give you suggestions on show format. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be keynote panel, keynote breakout session, right? Like, we're creative in that way. So don't get me started, Scott. Right. I can, as you can see, go off on a whole tangent.
No, but you're not only an MC, but you're also an advocate for the roles of MC and how important it is. And I know you work with other MCs. You probably have some courses to help teach these folks. And as you know, everyone seems to be getting into the MC biz. You know, when I started out, there weren't that many. Now everyone's an MC. A lot of keynotes are like, hey, I'm a keynote and an MC, but they're kind of different skill sets. You want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, they can do both. I do both. But to say I'm a keynote and I can automatically MC, that might not always be the case.
No, not at all. I don't believe that. So here's the interesting part. They're both a part of a speaking family. They're just not twins, right? So I would say maybe they're brother and sister a few years apart, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but they're definitely not twins. And I tell people all the time, most people who are great keynote speakers does not translate over to you being a great MC. However, if you're a great MC, 10 times out of 10, you're probably a kick-ass keynote speaker, right? I feel like it goes the opposite direction. I do think that there is a lot of undereducation about it. I think that because if they see someone like myself or you and it looks very effortless, they think that it's very easy and they don't understand the energy pull that it takes, especially when it's one or multiple days. So I think the biggest difference is, you know, a lot of keynote speakers get up there and they give one message, right? And they have their 45 to 60 minutes, whereas an MC is weaving together multiple messages, right? A keynote speaker gets up and they speak one time. I have counted. I have been on stage 14 times during an event before. A keynote speaker, their job is really to educate, empower, and teach the audience. Our job as MCs is to make sure the audience doesn't fall asleep between sessions, right? So it's like little things that are, again, in the same family. It just requires a different skill set, you know? And I believe that that's the beauty of MCs. Everybody can find their own MC superpower and incorporate it to make it their own. But I do think that more and more speakers and individuals are looking at emceeing as a either cross sell or upsell, because number one, they're realizing that number one, they've been asked to do it. Or number two, we've all been to a horrible event where it was a snooze fest. And we're like, oh my gosh, I could have did better than that with my eyes closed, with my hand tied around my back. Right. So it's almost like they see an opportunity to be able to add value to an event. So they're stepping into it, or they've been asked to do it. And now they're like, okay, how do I get into this? Because a few people have asked me to do it and I really don't know what I'm doing, but I know that they said I did a good job. So how do I make this a thing is what I hear.
Yeah, it's I think a very specific skill set. So what is one of the biggest mistakes you think event planners make in hiring an MC? We just talked about reasons why we wouldn't want those type of people. What's another mistake they might make?
They hire based on, I would say, budget. Or they hire based on who they know. And I would love for more event planners to treat hiring the MC the same way they treat hiring keynote speakers. And most keynote speakers, when a planner is considering them, is a short list, right? Let's keep it very simple and basic. We're looking for a leadership speaker, and they get three names that come across their desk, or they'll ask some friends who've hosted events, hey, I'm looking for a keynote speaker for my conference. Who do you recommend? Normally, if Scott says Jim Jones, right, they don't say, okay, we're going to hire Jim Jones. They're going to take a suggestion from Quinn, from Scott, from Rob Ferret. They're going to do some research. They're going to go to Google, you're going to university. They're going to go to LinkedIn, and they're going to look. And I feel like the same due diligence is not for the MC. It's almost like, okay, we need somebody, or they don't really know what they need. So like, yeah, we need somebody who's funny. And then they get the reviews back and it was too much humor. They didn't connect. Like, do you need a comedian, or do you need a host that has humorous aspects to him or her? So I think it's about, number one, just also to just realizing they need one. Did I even say that? There's still some people out there who don't even realize they need a professional MC or they need a professional host. So yes, they're still relying on, you know, Bob or introverted Ian, because mentally and a mindset standpoint, they have hired for every other role for this event but that. So there needs to be an awareness of this is how you complete the package.
And almost, when they don't complete the package, when they don't bring in MC, they're risking maybe having a meeting, a conference that isn't engaging, that people are not leaning in, they're on their phones, they're leaning back. What, you know, what's the real cost of a boring event to an organization's bottom line?
Number one, retention. That's why I love associations, because associations get it. If I come to your multi-day event and I only have pockets of inspiration, I mean, Scott's keynote was great, but that was only 60 minutes. This is a 3-day event. We're going from 9 to 5 each day. So the real cost of a boring or a bad event is retention. So retention is huge. You having to get new members or new attendees to your conference year after year is going to cost you. Number two, the real cost of a bad or a boring event is referrals. One of the things that I love about the National Speakers Association, so many people were in my inbox and they had FOMO. Why did they have FOMO? Because we were raving. We were on social. I had pictures with you. You had pictures with me. You had pictures with all these people. So again, if the event is boring, we're not posting about it. We're not hashtagging NSA Influence 2025. We're not saying how we met so many great connections, because what that does is that builds curiosity and FOMO in the social world. So people who missed out in 2025 are going to get their ticket for 2026. And I think lastly, the real cost of having a bad or a boring event is there's so much competition out there now. Like, there are so many conferences happening every day in the world. I mean, last time I checked, there was 64,000 meetings happening in the world every day. Some of it's a conference call. Some of it's a in-person meeting. I'm not talking about the United States, but Australia, Italy, Germany, Africa. All these different places are having meetings, right? And there's more organizations now. So if I'm looking at coming to an event and I go to this event for marketers and it's boring, there's probably 25 other marketing conferences or events. I'm just going to go there. So I think that you or a person who's producing or curating an event and it's boring, your attendees, your members have multiple options now. It's not just one or two places to choose from. There are plenty of options, and you'll lose that attendee to another association or conference with a similar theme and topic.
So over multiple day events, you're hosting a 3-day conference. What do you do to keep them engaged the second day, the third day? What is your techniques?
So a couple of things that I do is what I call, depending on how much time that I have, is audience or attendee activation activities. So for example, you know, if you were the speaker or the last speaker or one of the main keynote speakers, the very next day, I might do something that reinforces your message, something that has like, I'm a big prop girl, so I'm always looking for stuff. So I might say something like, Scott Bloom did a fabulous presentation on how we can earn more money as a speaker or as an MC. And he even talked about how we can have a king size payday in this business or an average size payday in this business. And I might do something around that, pull some people on stage, give out paydays, certain things like that. So anything that requires props and audience activation is what I like to do, as well as if I can get members at the mic. So for example, what are some of the aha, what did you learn? What are you going to walk away with as well? And then I think a lot of it too is just relationship building. So one of the things that I do that I think has positioned me well is not just working on the main stage. So for example, if there's an exhibit hall, I'm playing rolling reporter, which means I might be doing interviews with some of the keynote speakers they can use for re-content purposing, right? I'm talking to some of the attendees, I'm talking to the sponsors. So it's just about how do we kind of navigate. Also too, is there some type of challenge that's involved? You know, I wear sneakers on stage. So I've said, listen, we're in a convention center. I know health and wellness is a huge thing. Let's do a steps challenge. Right. So there could be something that's happening where we're counting steps and at the end reminding them to submit or take a screenshot of their watch or their phone that shows the steps. So it just really is about how can I work with the planner or organizer and create certain pockets of intentional interaction and activities that will keep them wanting to come back. And then one of my favorites, last but not least, is a giveaway, right? So for example, if they're like, well, we don't really have anything to give away, sometimes it's like, you know, door prizes. But I'm like, if you don't have anything, you have a conference ticket to next year. So give them an incentive to come back. If you come back all 3 days, if you visit the vendors, you know, at the end, we're going to give away a 2026 conference ticket, but you have to be present to win. So there's just little things that I do to keep them energized. And then people will come and they'll show me their sneakers. They'll show me how many steps they have so far. They'll show me how many stamps they have on their thing and tell me why they're going to win in 2026. So there's just little things that I do to keep the energy up, but also really to keep them coming back, because there's nothing worse than having a 3-day event with 1,000 people and it's day 3 and Scott is the closing keynote speaker and there's only 600 people in the room where there was 1,000 on day 1. So I have my tricks.
That's great. And what event professionals who are listening are hearing is that the MC's role goes beyond just the stage. There's so many other ways that they can use us to keep the audience engaged. We were the people on stage. So for us to go out there and utilize, you know, our skills at a trade show and walk around and shoot some video or just be around and talk to people. Hey, what have you been getting out of it? So that they feel like there's, you know, a relationship continuing to build. When you're on stage, how often do you come off the stage to talk to people in the audience? Is that something that you do as well?
Always. I love to shake hands and kiss babies. I mean, yeah. Like, I just feel like, yeah, some people take it as a celebrity role. I take it as a human role. Whereas if you see me here, I like to be an extension of the team. So people like, hey, Quinn, I know you said lunch was in the green room. Which way is the green room? So I'll come off stage. Hey, it's here. Oh, do you want me to take you there? You know, I do breakout session support as well. So there's some people who they'll do well, and I'll pass out their handouts. I'll make sure that their presentation is up. So it really depends. But yes, I don't like to sit still. You know, like, it's like I'm here for 3 days, work me. And I feel like if I'm just backstage or twiddling my thumbs or eating bonbons and drinking tea, I'm not being useful. So yes, one of my favorite things is to actually get off stage and connect and mix and mingle, because a lot of times I'll hear some things that people might not put on the evaluation, and I'll share that with the planner. You know, I like to be that eyes and ears. Like, look, I don't know if they put it on there or not, but here is what I heard during the bathroom more than one time. Or here's what I heard. And they'll just tell me because they feel like, oh, Quinn's my friend, right? I have such a personality that they're telling me different things. So that's also why I very much like to being amongst the attendees and the audience members, not just on stage or backstage, because it is a chance for me to connect. And I'm a people person. So that is also the fun part for me as well.
And there's another aspect of our value is going around, not only just meeting people, but as you said, getting some feedback, being able to get the vibe, which they might not always, you know, understand because they're not interacting with everyone. They're making assumptions. How do you personally know that you have been effective at an event, that you've transformed the event by being there?
They say to me, how long have you been working with the company? I'm like, no, I'm a contractor. I mean, they're like, you don't work for X, Y, and Z Association? Oh my goodness. And then it goes, this is a real job? Like, you can get paid to host events? So that's how I know that I did really well. I know that I did well, number one, if people in the audience say how long I've been with the company. I know I did well when events start and end on time. I know I did well where the event planner is like, this is the first time I breathed in the last 4 years of doing this. So if I don't see the planner like stressed out, looking like they haven't slept in 17 days, I know that I did well because they were actually able to sleep a little bit. And I always say 17th, 18th hour changes do not scare me. This is events. Give it to me. You know what I mean? Like, give it to me. So if there's something that needs to shift, which happens, you know, Scott was supposed to be the keynote speaker. And for whatever reason, he got COVID, couldn't make it, went to the wrong airport. Now we have this person. I know it's not on your script. I'm like, it's okay. Let me get my 5 minutes with Scott. We'll make it happen. Like, you know, so it's just like, I love the chaos of it all. Like, I love the unpredictability of it because it also, it keeps me sharp. Whereas sometimes when you're doing the keynote, it's kind of like the same presentation, just slightly changed, where I feel like this keeps me sharp and keeps me energized.
Yeah, I think what happens unanimously is that once we're there, they get it.
And yes.
And part of our business model is we'll do repeat business. We'll be with a company year after year, or an organization year after year, because they're happy to see us. We are that connection to the next year, and they're looking forward to seeing us. And I know almost 100%, if they've never had an MC and I've been there, whether it's me or someone else, they're going to have an MC every year. And I recently had an association that I hosted for 3 days, did their awards program, but she, the producer, has been trying to advocate for an MC for years. And the old guard was pushing back. We don't get it. We don't understand. And once we're there, they go, okay, I finally got it. This is why we need one.
I did a tech engineering conference for data engineers. And there was a woman there and she came up to me and I didn't know who she was, but I could tell that she was in a position of power, C-suite executive committee, something like that. And she said to me, she was like, I was the one that was really against hiring an MC. I am so glad they proved me wrong. Because right. You do. There's a fight there. It's like, why do we spend the money on this? What are you talking about? I don't get it. And then it's just like, I've never had someone come to me and say, that was a complete waste of money. I do not know why they hired you. Right. I've never had that before. Right. It's always like, I definitely see the value. I definitely see the benefit of what it is that you do. Honestly, this is the first time that I feel like I haven't fell asleep.
I think when they're arguing against having an MC, they don't have an idea of what that means. They just think, why are we having someone go, please welcome so-and-so? And from their point of view, I get it. They don't know what the role is. And hopefully people who are listening here today, I've had a lot of MCs on recently. So I do want to find out a little bit more about you. We have a section on the program now where we get to know you a little bit better. And so we're going to get to know Quinn Connors right now. A quick rapid fire question, quick response is always great. So you up for it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Best event you ever emceed? And I'm sure there's some great ones, but any that stand out, either the location or just the audience?
I would say the audience was Women in Business. I was in my happy place.
And worst event disaster you've had to fix on the fly?
Woman went into labor.
Get out of here. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. She went into labor. She was having some issues and challenges. The event planner was freaking out. And I'm like, listen, look at me. This is what I need you to do. Right. And I told her what to do. I was like, I'm not delivering a baby. I don't know that. But here's what I can tell you to do. And of course, this is the first time it's happened to me, but it worked itself out. And the plan that I said, it worked out. So
I think we should put that as one of our qualifications. We can also deliver babies in the audience if we had to, or get someone who can.
If I had to. Yeah, if I had to, I would have.
We've watched enough TV. Not? You just get the hot towels and, you know, a couple other things.
Exactly.
Maybe a belt to bite down on. If you were an MCing, what would you be doing?
I'd be in marketing.
I can see that.
I like marketing. I believe that marketing is just a creative way to tell people who you are and what you do. And I think that most people struggle with marketing, but more importantly, they believe that their services will sell itself. And I believe if marketing is prioritized, selling is easier.
Exactly. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
Best piece of advice was around this MC space, which is I struggle with if I wanted to go keynote speaker or MC. And a friend of mine said, stop trying to be a horse when you were called to be a unicorn, meaning the MC was my unicorn lane.
Oh, nice.
And I got it.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And finally, what's something people would be surprised to know about you?
That Dirty Dancing is my favorite movie.
Nobody puts Quinn in the corner.
Exactly. Exactly. My husband was just like, why do you like that? I don't know. I mean, like, it was a whole moment when Patrick Swayze passed. I was just like in my feelings. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think that Dirty Dancing is, people probably wouldn't expect that from me, but I love it.
I love that. And what's hilarious is I have a Dirty Dancing moment in my show.
Do you?
Yeah. When I'm hosting an awards program, we do a little Don't Forget the Lyrics. And one of the songs is, you know, the classic song from Dirty Dancing, The Time of Your Life.
Yes.
And after they sing the lyrics, I put the mic down and the music's playing and everyone knows it. And I look at the biggest guy on stage and I put my hands out for him to do the leap. And I'm going to send you a video after this of a guy who I almost, like, most of the time they just run into my hands. I almost lifted him over my head. I don't know if he was a gymnast. It wasn't planned. He just went for it and had enough momentum. But after this is over, I'm going to send you that clip. And since you're it's hilarious.
Please do.
So much fun to spend this time and get to know you a little bit more and hear your passion for emceeing, which I think is great. And people like you are helping all of us getting the word out to show people how essential it is to have a good MC at your association, at your conference, at your corporate meeting. It makes everything better. It gets everyone more involved and helps you to keep on bringing people back time and time again. So thank you for that.
No, thank you. And I think it's going to be both of our jobs is to continue to advocate for the role, right? If more people are talking about it and explaining the importance of it, I think that the more of us will get hired and they'll see the benefit of it. Because again, I just want to challenge traditional conference culture, like hire someone to really put a bow on this entire event package. And that could be me or you or any other professional MC that aligns with the vision and the vibe of their event.
Absolutely. Anyway, thank you so much, Quinn.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's it for now. Thanks once again to eSpeakers, the number one way to find your next perfect speaker. With the deepest catalog of professionals available, you can be assured that the speaker you book will be the absolute best speaker based on your goals, bar none. I've been your host, Scott Bloom, professional MC and comedic keynote speaker. And of course, your connoisseur of connections. Oh, by the way, and if you're interested, you can book me for your next event on eSpeakers Marketplace at eSpeakers.com/marketplace. And if you like what you heard, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. If you love what you heard, drop us a review and don't forget to share with your friends. Thanks so much for listening. Now go out and make your event a great one.